Welcome to the fifth episode of the Ikivi Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Sobia Amin, a multi-hyphenate from Dhaka, Bangladesh. She is recognized for her accomplishments as an architect, baker, model, social media influencer, and social activist. She is an inspiration to many, especially the youth, for breaking the glass ceiling in multiple spheres as a Bangladeshi woman. Featured on Vogue, Elle, and Architectural Digest for her work and being the face of the phenomenal Love Child campaign in 2022 with Masaba Gupta, she has taken the Indian fashion, beauty, and lifestyle industry by storm while endorsing self-love and body positivity. In this episode, we have an in-depth conversation about her journey, her sensational rise to fame, and who she is beyond being a popular fashion figure in the industry. Thank you so much, Sobia, for joining us today and for having this conversation with us at Ikivi. I am very excited to chat with you today. We have so many questions and very interested on your journey and who you are and where you've come to be and what your intentions are with your social media presence and what you want to do with your life in general. We've worked so much together in the past few years that I'm now very excited to actually speak to you one-on-one and actually have this conversation. So my first question to you is, can you tell us, I know this, but can you tell us and our audience and those listening in, tell us a little bit more about yourself, when this all began, and also your very interesting navigation of from being an architect and a baker to a model and an activist and a social media influencer.
Thank you for having me, first of all. It's so nice to have your face finally, because like I feel like we've only worked over emails and text. Ikivi was like one of my initial brands, I think, when I was first like, I guess, discovered for India. it's been such an interesting journey because I feel like my social media was like a journal to me. So I never deleted all my old posts either, because I feel like, I think people really think it happens overnight. It doesn't. A lot of things might change overnight, but I think the process of it, at least for me, was not overnight for sure. So I think initially, I used it as a journal, especially when I was studying architecture. Mm-hmm. I think when you go back, you'll see a lot of architectural like posts, which is just like buildings. I used to like exploring artwork and stuff like that. And I think the transition happened when I had to move back home. So I was actually doing really bad with my mental health. And I decided to like leave my master's halfway through. So I did have my architecture degree. And I think the biggest mistake I did is I didn't know that I should have taken a break. And I was scared to take that break because I thought if I take a break, I'll never want to go back and finish my master's. So a lot of us ended up dropping out because the pressure was so much. And I just couldn't take it anymore. It was just like, I mean, architecture as a degree was like bad enough. So I think it took a really bad toll, like for my mental health. And this is like when I was probably the fittest in my life. Like, and I say this over and over again, because obviously with like my body activism and whatnot, a lot of people are always like, you're so unhealthy, blah, blah, blah. And obviously I was a lot lighter than I am today back then, but I was still not like, you know, a size 10 or whatever. Like I was not small. So it's a lot to do with like, you know, mental health has some correlation to it, but it's not all. So this is like the time I would like swim for an hour, I would do hot yoga for 2 hours, and yet it was like the most depressed like era of my life. And so I you know, I had to say no. You know, the breaking point was like I became suicidal, and I was like, no, I have to take this time off. And I was very lucky because my father was very understanding of this, like being an international student, it's a lot of money and whatnot. And I did take all of that into consideration. But then, you know, he told me, what's the point of doing all of this if your life is not worth living. So I really appreciate that I got the opportunity to leave when I could. I know a lot of people don't, but it's a very toxic environment that I had to move away from. But I, like, when I look back at it today, I think it is what probably made me a stronger person to have, like, survived that and overcome that. To have lived through it is what probably made me a stronger person. And I don't think when I initially moved back, because I was still quite depressed, I think moving back added on to a different part of depression, because, you know, it's just so different. Everything is so different. So to come back from Sydney to Dhaka, that's like poles apart socially. So I think for 6 months, I just, like, moped. So I was, like, very big on getting, like, my dogs and stuff like that. I got very lucky. A family friend had dogs that gave puppies, and they gave it to me. So I took my dogs. So I think that really helped with me getting back. And so I had started working as an architect in our firm. And I thought, you know, it's such a boring life if you're working 9 to 5. I had to, like, spice it up. So, like, the first thing I realized was I was, like, addicted to buying saris, which is so wrong. Like, I realized what a big consumer I was. Like, I would go buy saris weekly or whatever. Like, I don't know what it
we
was.
We all were. And, we all were.
Yeah. And I think also this whole unhealthy thing of, like, if you've posted it, you can't wear it ever again, and stuff like that. I think I was, like, in that unhealthy cycle with, like, what, 1,000 followers. You know, I remember the reason I wanted to wear a sari so much was because the 6 years that I was away, I had taken 2 saris and I never got to wear them. I wore it only maybe once for, like, you know how you guys have Vaisakhi? That was it. And one of my cousins got married. Those were the 2 times in the 6 years I could wear it in Australia. So I was like, no, I think I have to practice wearing a sari. If I wear it every day, maybe I'll get better at draping it. And I still am not good at draping it. It's like this illusion I've created. I don't know why people think I'm really good at wearing the sari, but I'm pretty shit at it. I always,
because you look beautiful in it.
But yeah, so I think the social media presence, I think maybe started with the saris, because I used to make it a point to, like, wear it and go to work, and I used to document it. As I said, it was like a visual journal for me, and I didn't really realize it was like an open account. Like, this is how bad I was at social media. I didn't know what was a public account, what was a private account. And I think, like, you know, that was like a language of, like, how I probably dressed, and it was somehow very different from other people, because I think they used a lot of colors, or, like, I'm, instead of blouses, I'd wear, like, a crop top or a sweater, which is, I think, really old, but, like, I think a lot of people don't do that. Or here, they weren't doing that back then, which is only, like, a few years ago. And I think that got a lot of attention. But because I said I had moved back, and, like, all my friends had probably been living somewhere else, so I was like, okay, I need to be social. So I used to bake cakes and take it over to people's houses, and they used to think, like, you know, if they invite me and stuff, and a lot of them would be like, oh, where did you buy it from? And I'd be like, I made it. And so a lot of them were like, you should, like, they're like, can we, like, order it or something? I was like, yeah, I'll make it for you. They're like, no, like, you should start charging for it. Like, you can, like, you know, easily sell it. And then I obviously had no idea about, like, the market of, like, the food industry or anything. And I still think I still don't understand it properly. But I think when I initially started, I undercharged so much, because obviously I wasn't confident in what I was doing, because it's something I had not done previously. I just thought I was, like, one of those girls who really liked baking and could do well with it. But then when I started experimenting with it, like, in an architectural or artistic manner, I really started enjoying it. But I felt like it was too much to be doing, like, a 9 to 5, come home, bake. And before leaving for the office, I would have to have the cakes ready for the next day's order. So I thought it was really hectic. During the pandemic, I think that was such a, like, I didn't really feel like dressing up or any of that. So I didn't really do the whole dressing up bit as much once I was baking, because you're a mess, basically. You have to be dressed well enough to be running around and getting messy. But during the pandemic, I was really dumb, because I was like, I was like being sent a lot of clothes by a lot of brands here in Bangladesh, and I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. I don't know why they're sending it to me, but they want pictures. And then I think my sister had to take pictures for me once, which was like, because she had a DSLR and everything. And so then she was like, you know, people charge for this. I was like, you think? I don't know. Like, I didn't really understand what influencers were. I think even when I was in uni, for me, influencers were basically YouTubers. Because yeah. I don't think Instagram, maybe it was big, but I was under a rock.
How many years ago was this?
I think I started uni in 2012. But okay. Yeah, so even then, I think YouTube was big, but Instagram had not blown up yet as much. I didn't really understand the concept of like influencing. And so then when she said, you know, you can charge for stuff like this. And I didn't understand. I was always really shy about money. Like the whole, like even the cake part, I get so like uncomfortable when I have to mention the price and stuff like that. Not anymore, obviously. But like when I first started, I was very, very shy about money. And I think that's a big difference now. I don't think I'm as shy. But I feel like that is such a big problem in so many women. You know, it's such a common thing. Even when I was doing a master's degree, right, there was this lady, and I'll never forget, like in a classroom full of like people, she actually asked, like, how many of you are confident to go up and, you know, ask for X amount, whatever. And all the men raised their hands, and like, no, none of the women. This is in Australia, right? Like, I would say, okay, maybe this is like a problem on this part of the world. This is like in Australia. Like, and all of us are just like, yeah, no, you know? And then she was actually like British Indian. And so she was like, see, this is such a big problem. Like, women tend to have this like filter or like shame in asking for what they deserve, whether it's financial or like whatever it is. Like, there is that barrier. I don't know what it is, if we were taught that or if it's inherent at this point. Like it's just, I think the whole money part, the monetization of what I was doing was always very uncomfortable for me, which is great now, because when you have a manager,
can you tell me a little bit more about your journey in terms of your personality and the confidence? And now when we look at your social media presence, we see a lot of strength and we see a lot of sureness in themselves, in who they are. And that's something that's really commendable, because we need to see that a lot more now, not just like you're saying amongst women, but also people in general, where with social media, we're constantly comparing ourselves to each other. So I wanted to know, and you were talking about how, you know, being in Australia and studying architecture really affected your mental health. What was your journey like in terms of your personality and how you built that confidence for yourself right from then to now?
I think I was very fortunate because I had a very strong group of women, and I swear they were just women. And I don't know how during that period of my life, they were just like, you know, the anchor that held me together. They really helped me through the process of like, you know, that whole anxious depression, everything like that was going on with me, which I thought was so hard to fight alone. I think they'll always be like a part of my life. Like, even if I don't talk to them every day or whatever, I just feel like I got so lucky with the surrounding that I had, because everyone was just so supportive mentally, physically. Like, you know, I had like crippling anxiety, like say I wouldn't be able to cook or whatever. There was someone who would come do that. Or like, it was just so beautiful. Like, I know it's not a beautiful thing to go through, but to know that there are people that will love you at your worst, I think is what probably gave me the strength to go on.
Thank you for listening to the Ikivi podcast. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikivi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small sustainable business based in India, run by 5 women, handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode.
Who are you today? Who is the person you are today?
You know what? I keep flipping back and forth. Like, you know, sometimes I feel like, okay, you know, I'm confident in who I am and whatnot. But then I also am like, there's always the imposter syndrome. You're not mm-hmm. doing enough. And I think social media plays a big role in that, because people are only showing the best parts of their life. And when you start comparing yourself to that, in my mid-20s, I was so confident that I know who I am. And I feel like the older I'm growing, I'm just like so much more uncertain of who I am becoming or who I could be or how I react to situations. I think when I initially started with the, like, say, even when the whole Masaba campaign happened with me during the pandemic, I was very naive in the way I think I took how people talked to me, like, and like how people treated me and stuff like that. I think I was a lot more obviously inexperienced during that time because I had no idea what it was like to be in the social life. That change for me was quite a drastic one because I mm-hmm. feel like I come across as a very social person or an extrovert. But the truth is I'm very, very reserved. I am mostly an introvert, but because when I'm out, I'm very social and I'm very outspoken. People assume that I love being like social. But I think from my stories at home, you can tell I don't like anyone. I'm like always whispering to all.
But then how does that kind of reflect online? Do you get, because you're constantly expected to be on and available and, you know, present for people. Now that you've built such a strong community around you, it's almost as if you have to be there 24/7. How do you kind of deal with that and set boundaries?
So initially, I had no idea how to do that because I think I would get like messages at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and I would immediately reply. I think this actually initially, the boundary part for that started for me during the cake business because I remember, and I obviously didn't understand because I was still very heavily making cakes and doing the influencing part as well. I think like one of the clients, he called me at 12 to wish his girlfriend on my story and stuff like that. And obviously I didn't understand why, because people are just like, okay, cakes. You know what I mean? Like they buy, you post, that's up to you, right? And all that. And I thought it was just so odd. And then when I shared this, like, with other people, they're like, yeah, you should ask for like another charge. Why would you post someone you don't know? That's so odd. So, and then I was like, no, I need a clear boundary. Like, people are not allowed to message me post 10 p.m. And if they do, I'll have to get back the next day. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that was that then. But then I realized again, when with the influencing, when it was like really exhausting, like brands would maybe message you around like 3 a.m. and stuff like that. I was getting a little overwhelmed, even though mm-hmm. I had a manager back then here as well, back home. He told me the same thing. He's a good friend. So he said, no, you don't have to reply. I know they're expecting you to be there 24/7. You can't do that. And then in the middle, again, I went back to like managing myself. And mm-hmm. Again, the whole money thing, I think like I'm in my 30s now. I started what, like around 28? Or like, you know, like when mm-hmm. I full on dived into it. And I think, you know, I started so late and I always used to say, maybe, you know, I wish I picked up on this when I was younger. And then I tell myself I would have been killed by now or like done something really stupid. I think like for the younger audience, and that's what terrifies me a lot, I think people are very, I think they glamorize the part of you getting free things, you know, free products and stuff like that. But I don't think they realize that nothing in the world is free. What scares me even more is I see a lot of people that are around my age or older who still like kind of romanticize that, getting the free stuff. And and I'm just like, eh. Yeah. I would like to tell you it's not the same.
But I feel like you were just saying, a lot of people definitely follow you for your style and for your artistic expression and all of that. And that's for sure. Like, it's clearly evident from your social media and what you post and those kind of things. But also we feel like, you know, in terms of self-expression and being and having a very powerful stance and bold stance on being size inclusive and kind of having to partner with brands that are also size inclusive. What has your experience been like with that in terms of your communication to your audience, in terms of, you know, being very clear and confident about your expression of who you are, as well as your, as well as size inclusivity?
I think initially when I started, a lot of the brands I knew were not size inclusive because I had bought from them previously, and I think they charged different, you know, for being a different size. So I think to see that shift was also very interesting within like the span of maybe 2 years, right? It was a very quick one, because, you know, usually these things take so long. But I also fear this a lot, which is a lot of the brands will do it for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because they need me to shoot or whatnot. But I am scared that they will not cater to someone of a bigger size the same way. And that is, I think it's because I've heard these stories, right? Which is why it scares me a lot in picking out brands that will actually cater to an audience that is of a different size, whether it's like smaller or bigger, whatever it is. The whole fat tax thing was a real thing. I don't know if it still is in a few brands. I don't think they can survive if it's still a thing. But it was a very, very real thing even a few years ago, even four years ago or 3 years ago. It was something that was very evident and something that I saw even while buying clothes. So I feel like it is a change that definitely took place, but I don't know how genuine it is. And that is what scares me a bit.
Yeah. I mean, have you had the same experience, like challenges with brands right from the beginning? How has that experience been with interacting with brands?
I don't know. Like, honestly, a lot of people tell me that it can be really, really bad. And I'm just like, I don't know how I got really lucky. None of them were bad with me. But I do understand in situations of, I think, styling, maybe if the stylist is not very inclusive or whatever. I've been lucky again. I think the ones that I've always worked with were fantastic and they were really good at doing what I do. But I think that's a thing that I see in a lot of other plus size models. They've had to wear like something really sad compared to like the whole campaign, like the other models and stuff like that. So it's really, it's really interesting. And like when I hear all these terrible things about like plus size models being treated differently, right? Like in like bigger campaigns, there are people like even models, apparently they'll be like, oh, I can't eat anything or whatever. I'm still, it's like 2023, please eat something. this is such toxic behavior. And even yesterday, my friend and I were talking about this because he's finishing his like, you know, medical degree in like America. And he was telling me, you know, how Gwyneth Paltrow, she's having like all these cases go on. And I think I watched this TikTok. I think it wasn't probably Instagram. One of these girls, she came on and she reviewed like what she eats in a day. And it is so unhealthy. And she said, you know, I literally had an eating disorder, right? And I would eat more than in a day as a teen.
Oh my God.
This is a full blown, like, you know, adult. So that's a common thing. Apparently in LA, there are people that are obviously, if you're living in LA, first of all, you're making a bigger income than like most people. But a lot of these stars apparently do this whole thing where they're living on IVs. There's like a professional nurse who comes in, injects you with the nutrients you need. And that's how you live. And I'm like, that just sounds so ridiculous.
Completely. What's the point of life?
Yeah, and then like the whole Ozempic thing that has happened, like Mindy Kaling being like accused of it constantly and stuff like that. But it's just like, I don't know, I feel like the unhealthy, there's like a really fine line, I guess, between being healthy and unhealthy. And no one is ever gonna go say these things are unhealthy because she's skinny, right? Or like, that's the thing. It's just such a, I don't know, like, why can't you just let people choose what they're doing? Sure, like, if they need help, they'll ask for it. But why do you have to go comment on it? And I think that's been, like, the case for so many years. I think it's finally the younger generation is a lot more open about speaking about their, like, sexuality, their bodies, and everything. And I think that's so nice to see.
Have you seen progress since you began in terms of how people kind of interact and respond and communicate with you, not just with brands, but also, you know, regular people out there in terms of, you know, your social activism? Have you seen it kind of evolve and change and be more accepting over the years?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of it is curiosity because obviously I come from a different country as well, right? I think everyone is just so curious of how I got in because I'm like, it's really interesting because I hear like stories about myself and I'm so entertained because it's nowhere near the truth. And I'm just like...
This is a story you should tell us as well. I know you kind of told us your journey, but tell us what kind of changed things. But this is later after you answer this question.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people think like I have a lot of political links. And I don't know. I hear a lot of these rumors. It's really funny because like nowhere in my life was that a part of my, you know, social thing. So it's just really interesting. Like people... like question how I got there, right? And it's, I think maybe if I wasn't me, maybe I would also wonder how the hell am I where I am or whatever I'm doing. I think it's been so interesting because it's a question I'm asked in both countries and no one wants to believe my truth. Like I'm like, I swear these are the things I was doing, and then I just happen to be like, you know, I did the Masaba thing and that's what really blew up for me. And no one believes that, you know, they're like, how did Masaba catch on? Like, it was from the stories. I tagged them. Like, that was it. There was nothing more to it. So, it's really interesting because, like, you know, people think like somehow I was linked to like, the industry, and it also because like my mom is Urdu speaking and you know a lot of people can't differentiate, so they also think maybe I'm part Indian and stuff like that, and I'm just like, no, I wish but I wish we were back to just being one subcontinent. It would make life easier. But I'm not.
To kind of go back a little bit, I thank you for answering that question as well, and I feel like there are a lot of people, probably, like you said, who are curious about people who've kind of gained social media presence and how they came to be, because everybody wants to start doing things and, you know, kind of have that kind of impact. But it's no real fixed answer. And we know that with the algorithm that it's no, you know, certain path that you can follow to achieve this particular goal. But to go back a little bit in terms of, you know, your presence and your voice that you have and your social activism in terms of being size inclusive, have you seen people be a bit more understanding and inclusive? Because it's something that I feel pre-pandemic, there was no real conversation about it. I feel like it's such an important aspect of the fashion industry that we need to structurally change. So I'm trying to understand from a consumer point of view, what are their thoughts in terms of asking brands to be more inclusive in general, not just with size, but with gender? But, you know, there's so much that a brand can do. So I just wanted to understand what your experience was like from a consumer point of view.
I think, yeah, that definitely changed. I think with the pandemic, a lot of people were more expressive of who they were as well, regardless of like the gender, sexuality, size, all of that. And I think that shift came about because we didn't have much to do, right? So maybe they were a lot more like, you know, busy with work and stuff like that. But the conversations also came up. I think like the whole Clubhouse thing during the pandemic was such a big part of like, you know, what social media was running on. And I feel like the people I know online are mostly through that as well, because I've had conversations on these like rooms with them about the fashion industry and stuff like that. And being from a completely different industry, like initially, I think I barely knew it. Like for me, I always said that I was so shit at like understanding fashion. I think I had a very unique sense of style, but I was never good at like all these like seasons and runways and stuff like that. So I was quite honest about it. And I was like, I really don't know what's good, what's bad. You know, what's the right thing to say or not. So, I mean, I did that a lot to educate myself, I think. Like, the conversations really helped me understand what the industry was kind of lacking, or, you know, what it was kind of on overdrive with. And I think during the pandemic, that's the thing, the manipulation of, like, social media was a little less, because it was whatever people wanted to consume. You know what I mean? Like, the agencies and the brands did not have as much power because it took a big hit financially. I think that's why the change in the conversations came about, because people now finally had time to speak about it. And they were like, yes, you know, we have a phone, we can record it and put it out. I feel like the tokenism part is a lot less now. Like, there will be more than one plus size person on, like, you know, on a set. A lot of it is just so much pretense of acceptance. That's what's scary. That's what I truly fear, that a lot of it is just pretending to be accepting, which is another thing. I think the Cosmo Bloggers Awards and whatever that's going on, I don't know if you follow Aishwarya. Yeah, Aishwarya is like known for being so vocal about whatever. So she said during the whole, I think for the plus size bloggers or whatever, during the jury, the jury in a closed room, there were comments like, oh, but like everyone wants to be skinny and stuff like that. And I'm like, what the hell? And then so she was saying that to know that a room of judges, like there are people that are mocking you and this, like, this is the panelist, like they're working so hard towards this. But again, like, you know, it's like all taken out of context. So that was really upsetting to like hear. I'm not shocked, but that is upsetting to hear.
Yeah.
So then the only thing I said was it all of them on the panel? And she's like, no, it wasn't all of them. But whatever it is, you shouldn't feel comfortable to say something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah. No, so, I definitely feel like there is progress, and it's people like you who are creating, making that difference, because otherwise, people are just going to kind of continue on their own paths with blinders on and just do whatever has been done all these years without even thinking about it, without even thinking that they're doing something wrong. But like this person saying, passing those comments like that, like, how absurd is that? And I hope somebody kind of calls them out.
There's also this whole power dynamic there, right? Mm-hmm. They're the judges. And that is like, yeah, so this person, I'm sure, whoever it was in that jury, I'm sure they don't go around saying these things in public, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure they can't say that in front of the audience or the people that they're judging. So that's where it's scary, that people of power decide to do stuff like that, right?
Mm.
So I also remember from one of the Clubhouse conversations where this girl had asked Zoya Akhtar, like, would you cast like a plus size, like, you know, main mainstream, like put that person as mainstream actress or whatever. And she said, I personally, Zoya, have no problem with it, but I cannot do this based on whatever I feel like doing. You have to realize there are people who are paying for me to make that movie. And they're also reading the audience. If the audience doesn't want it, I can't do anything about it. So, you know, that for me was so eye-opening in the way, like, all of these industries in the media work, right? Not just, like, say, the fashion. It is true. It is what the consumer will take. And the consumer might not be happy seeing that, you know? So it's just like, you know, it was very eye-opening to me because that's one of the very few conversations I always vividly remember.
Do you feel like we are making progress in some way, though, in terms of, you know, awareness? Because I feel like it all kind of boils down to awareness, do you think?
I think it boils down to awareness, but there's also like years and years of like brainwashing, right? Of whatever you've consumed or what you've been taught to, like, to break out of that is just so, I think you have to be open to evolve, basically, right? So I think that depends on like how an individual feels, because I mean, it's such a common thing I've heard over and over again. There are people who will, like, you know, they'll pretend to be like accepting and stuff like that, but internally they're not. They've had, you know, they've been taught a different thing and they never really got out of it or like wanted to learn beyond that, no matter what you're consuming and whatnot. But I also believe, like, I think with media, right, and social media being such a prominent part of like everyone's life now, constantly, like, you know, you don't even realize that you're watching hours of it. Whatever you're consuming is somewhat like, you know, it'll come into you. It's done.
I mean thank you so much for telling us your story and your thoughts, and I have like all these other questions that I wanted to ask you, but I feel like, you know, that it kind of, this conversation really is an introduction to who you are and who you are behind the scenes. And I love that. I love having to have this conversation with you as opposed to, you know, talking about different opinions and perceptions about different things. So I'd like to save that for another conversation. But my last question to you is, can you tell us a little bit more about your plans or what you have up your sleeve, and where do you see yourself in the next few years?
So see, I'm taking this month off to try and figure that out, because I feel while I look like I know what the hell is going on, I don't. I really feel lost in most cases, and I always like, it doesn't matter whichever profession it was for me, I feel like imposter syndrome is very real for me. And I get really scared, because I mean, this one is so like audience based and it's just so out there, right? It really can get very overwhelming, because it's just, I feel like it's like a performance to an extent, right?
It is.
That has to be like met constantly. So for me, I think the next month that I take off, I just want to like concentrate on basically preserving my own energy.
Yeah.
Trying to see where I want to take things. Obviously, I would like to cater to a bigger audience as well. I feel like my audience right now is very, very Southeast Asian and diaspora and whatnot. I would love to expand that, because I feel like most brown representatives that we have are actually from the diaspora, which is not quite what it is being from this part of the world. And while their struggles are very valid, I understand all of that. It is not the same. It's a big win to have all of them representing us and stuff like that, but it is usually never the same.
Yeah, for sure. I think the narrative of what our countries kind of offer to the world is is very important, and the story needs to be told in different perspectives and in different ways. I feel like with the fashion industry, there's a lot of light now from the West on India. I think that's wonderful, and I'm really excited that that's something that's on your mind, is to tell stories from a very true and culturally rich part of the world. That's something that's really close to my heart as well, is telling stories of brands that we have that are born and, you know, kind of rooted in this culture that we have. So I'm really excited, and I'm totally looking forward to the stories that you're going to be telling soon. I'm really, really grateful that you agreed to have this conversation with me. It was well overdue, and I'm glad we actually had this conversation.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikivi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikivi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikivi.